Occupy Oakland protesters target that city's port.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Good morning, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Police clashed with protesters on the streets of Oakland, California in the early hours of this morning. And they arrested, reportedly, between 2 and 3 dozen people and fired tear gas into the crowd. At least one person was injured. And that comes hours after thousands in the Occupy Oakland movement overtook the port there, one of the nation's largest. Reporter Andrew Seltzer is with us now from Oakland. Hey, Andrew.
Hey there. How are you?
I'm doing well. Why did these protesters target the port?
To show their strength, to show that they're capable of shutting down a major piece of the economic system. That's the economic system that the Occupy Wall Street protests have been saying are unjust. So Oakland happens to be the location of the fifth largest port in the United States, major economic engine. Also, they're doing it in solidarity with some of the longshoremen in Washington state who've been going through a labor dispute.
I know just in the last few hours, Andrew, police have reportedly fired tear gas at protesters. We've heard even of some injuries. What's the latest there now?
Well, I was just in downtown Oakland less than an hour ago. The protesters tried to reclaim a building, which I believe was abandoned, perhaps foreclosed on by a bank. And there were also a small group of protesters that set some fire to dumpsters in the middle of the street. I haven't spoken to the police, but from what I understand, they came to both put out the fire and also evict the protesters who had taken over the foreclosed building. That's why police moved in. They arrested a few dozen people, and when they made a call on the loudspeaker, who was going to be under arrest, they said the people with the shields. There are people who had made shields out of cardboard and out of wooden pallets and so on. And so I think they targeted those people, although I don't know exactly who they arrested.
Andrew Seltzer, freelance reporter in Oakland. Andrew, thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
Fewer people sought jobless benefits last week. That number was down by 9,000, which is an encouraging sign for the job market. Let's do the numbers. European shares are higher. The European Central Bank cut interest rates by 0.25% today. That's the same day the summit of the group of 20 leading economies gets fully underway in Cannes. What was supposed to be a deadline for a European plan to tackle the debt crisis has turned into all eyes watching Greece and that country's planned bailout referendum. U.S. stocks yesterday, the Dow tacked on 178 points to close at 11,836. A new study says poverty is not only growing here in the U.S., it's also clustering, meaning the number of folks living near one another in poor communities is on the rise. From Station WSHU in Fairfield, Connecticut, Craig Lamolt reports.
Here are the list of the pantry days.
People at the New Opportunities Community Action Agency in Meriden, Connecticut, line up for information on food pantries. Jaylene Rodriguez came by to find out about home heating assistance. She lost her job in May, and she says things are pretty tough in Meriden right now.
I see that people want opportunity, but the doors are being shut down.
Meriden's an old industrial town in the center of Connecticut, within 20 minutes of four larger cities. The industry left years ago, and unemployment is more than 10%. A new report by Elizabeth Kneebone of the Brookings Institution looks at what she calls concentrated poverty. That's neighborhoods where at least 40% of people live below the poverty line. And she says it's suburban communities like Meriden that have seen the fastest increase in people living in neighborhoods like that.
And the concern there is as these suburban clusters of poverty grow, that we're creating communities that are walled off or isolated from opportunities like better jobs and better schools.
She says over the last decade, there's been an increase of 2.2 million Americans living in these poverty clusters. That reverses a downward trend that was seen in the booming 1990s. This kind of concentrated poverty nearly doubled in Midwestern metro areas over the last 10 years and increased by a third in southern cities. And it's felt in northeastern towns like Meriden, where Rodriguez says people like her may just have to leave.
Children and family will die here if they stay here in this kind of condition. I'm telling you, with my experience, we will never survive if this keep on.
Are you planning right now that you're going to leave Meriden?
Yeah, that's my next goal. If I cannot make it, I will have to leave myself.
She says she's still hoping, though, that a good job will come through. In Connecticut, I'm Craig LaMolt for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Ally Bank, offering Pop Money, a way to pay other people online by sending an email or text. Learn more at allybank.com. By Indiana University's Kelley School of Business, providing a personalized approach to career advancement. Learn more at kellei.iu.edu. And by Money Magazine's Take Charge Live, a series of events designed to help you take charge of your finances. November 16th at Boston College. Registration at moneytakecharge.com.
Later today, Groupon will unveil the price of its stock that's likely going to start trading tomorrow, valuing the company far less than expected. But Marketplace's Steve Henn reports Groupon shares have been selling for more on private markets.
The creation of big public markets for shares of still privately held tech companies has transformed Silicon Valley. Entrepreneurs here can now cash out before their companies even go public. Bubbles can inflate and pop before an IPO.
We're talking about an uninformed market, by and large.
Steve Kam is a Bay Area tech investor. He says private companies like Groupon that trade on so-called secondary markets don't have to disclose a lot of details about their books. That means
uninformed transactions, uninformed buyers and sellers, uninformed pricing. That's the problem with the secondary market.
When Groupon filed to go public, investors finally got a good look at its books and enthusiasm cooled. Jack Coffey's a securities professor at Columbia University.
Sordid things occur in this sort of shadowy world of being part public and part private.
This summer, trades on secondary markets pegged Groupon's value at close to $20 billion. Today, it's roughly half that. In Silicon Valley, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Finally, Amazon.com's got a new digital book lending library available to Amazon Prime members with Kindle e-readers. The program starts out with 5,000 titles, only one checkout at a time, once a month, for $79 a year, which leads me to one important question. Where's the public library again? I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
Nepotism, corruption, cronyism, all in a day's work for big business in Syria.
I love Syria. I love the president. I love everything he do. He give us a lot of promises and he achieve a lot of targets.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Syria, where being pro-government is good for the bottom line. That's next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.